Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything movies, TV, comics, and entertainment. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What's happening, everybody? My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. His name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about in the land of movies, TV, comics, and more. You are tuned into the entertainment edition of the ODPH. And we definitely want to keep that conversation rolling with you after the show. So, Pad, where does everybody go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over the website. Everything's been updated on the front page. So you need those social links. Boom, we got you. If you need the Patreon link, one tier, $2 a month, and a shout out to all our amazing patrons. Boom, we got you there. T Public Store link, the blogs, the classified section, which has friends of the show, such as 3FM Podcast, Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative, and many, many more. The directory. Pad, how many varieties are we on?
It's over 9,000.
See, that is why he is a statistician to the stars, because I can never keep track. Also, we have a great music section where a lot of the bands that you hear on the ODPH and 607 Podcast Network are featured, and they're putting out some new music, too, so that is always great to see. So if you want to get some Brian Wolfe and the Howlas, Tom Jolu, Second Suitors, Shout of the Robots, Floodlands, the list goes on and on and on, but amazing musicians. You can go there, click on their pages, get their downloads, go follow them. They're fantastic people. That's why we endorse them. And if it's anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can always find it at odphpodcast.com. And remember on social media to use the hashtag ODPHpod. Kicking off this edition of the show, we have to recap a series that is now, it's weird to say, it's at the halfway point.
I know. I don't hate that, though.
I don't hate it either.
There's not a lot of room for fluff.
Mm-hmm. They're getting right to the point. And obviously with the hoopla, if I can use that word,
yes,
behind it, I'm not mad about it either. It's just crazy to think that we've waited for this series for so long as fans.
Yep.
It's finally here.
Yep.
And now it's going to be gone.
Well, and I think the nice thing about it, too, is you think back to the final season, although technically it's two fucking seasons.
Yeah.
Where it was 24 episodes. And now, granted, they broke it up and it didn't all air, you know, in one long stretch.
Right.
You know, with the holiday break in between, like most television seasons do.
Mm-hmm.
They broke it up. But still, it was an absolute slog to get through. And just stay motivated even to the end of like, listen, it's the final season. We just got to get through these next couple episodes and then we'll be done. This one, it's like, all right, we got a new episode coming. Like when I had issues watching the episode last week, you know, because the service provider I watch it on was having issues, even though they said it was me and it wasn't. I was genuinely bummed. I'm like, shit, I'm going to have to avoid, you know, spoilers and social media posts until the episode gets posted tomorrow so I can watch it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas with the final season of The Walking Dead, if that had happened, I wouldn't have been that mad about it. I'd have been like, yeah, whatever.
Right. I mean, that's the one thing that obviously we're going to be talking into the latest spinoff from The Walking Dead universe on AMC television entitled The Ones Who Live. And yeah, I have to agree. The return show, if you will, obviously there has been so much behind this project. I think that's the only way we can describe it.
Yeah.
Starring Andrew Lincoln as Rick Grimes, Danai Gurira as Michonne, Pollyanna McIntosh as Jadis, who has been a thorn in their side.
To say the least.
Mm-hmm. That since we have heard about this, it was originally supposed to be a movie, and then obviously it spiraled now into its own show and miniseries. And coming in, there has been a lot of hoopla for it, and there has been a solid ratings for it as well, too. So we do have to classify it, because like Pat alluded to, the end of the quote-unquote flagship show of The Walking Dead was the never-ending story. 24 episodes. It actually broke it up in three parts because it was 8, 8, and 8.
Yep.
But honestly, it felt
forever.
Yeah. It literally was never going to end.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that show has run its course. It needed to end. That's why.
Also, I got to say the ratings for the episode on Sunday, despite going up against the Oscars, fairly good.
Oh, what were they?
905,000.
Oh, really? That's actually
up. Yeah. So considering the Oscars are on, and got to say, Oscars weren't that bad. You know, I enjoyed what I saw.
Have to agree.
905,000. Not bad.
Take it as a win. But obviously, the fans have been tuning in because obviously with the two main characters involved, and if you're into the Walking Dead universe, you've been waiting to see this story
mm-hmm.
for so long that honestly, this fell into the category of Black Adam, The Flash, Don Quixote for me, until I was actually in a theater watching it.
Yeah.
I was just not happening.
Well, and also just figuring out what happened to Rick, because what happens to Rick in the show, night and day different from the comic.
Mm, oh, absolutely.
Spoiler alert, and I feel like I can say now because it came out like, what, 4 or 5 years ago now? Rick dies in the comic.
Yeah. In the last arc, which was at Alexandria.
Yeah.
For Brave New World.
In the show, obviously, still alive.
Right. They took some detours with it, and that's one thing I like about the show, when they do something creative and different.
Yeah.
And that is what we have here with The Ones Who Live. So if you're new to the ODPH, first and foremost, thank you for checking us out. Drop us a review on your favorite podcatcher. It definitely helps the algorithm. What we like to do is give a spoiler-free statement after we give you a little background about what we're talking about. So if you haven't seen what we're going to be discussing, we're not going to ruin anything for you. We give you a countdown. Pad puts it in the liner notes of the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
That is the absolute failsafe that we're not going to ruin anything for you, the fan of what you want to watch. However, though, after we get done with that countdown, we deep dive and do not hold anything back. So consider yourself fair warned. So that all being said, let us get into the recap of episode 3 of The Ones Who Live, entitled By. Pad, what you think?
Thought it was a good episode. You know, a little bit of anticipation with this and see where they go, because this felt like the first full episode where we weren't kind of in the, all right, how did we get here portion?
Mm-hmm.
Because as we know, a number of years had passed since we last saw Rick and Michonne to where the show is now. You know, so I was anticipating this one a little bit just to see where things go. And I got to admit, they got me intrigued. You know, it's not kind of like a lull and like, all right, we're just kind of like running in place until we can get to the part in the plot where, all right, time to shift it into that next gear and really hit the nitrous, you know, if we're in Fast and Furious. You know, I like the pace they're going at. I enjoy it.
Well, it's all about family.
This is true.
I have to agree. Like, I like this episode. I wasn't in love with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But now that we're actually in quote unquote present time,
mm-hmm.
I like how they set things up. Albeit, though, they did borrow a little bit
mm-hmm.
from the previous two episodes.
A little.
Like, it's a lot of the similar themes that, I mean, we always complain about repetitive dialogue and thoughts for shows like this.
Yeah.
That how many times are you going to struggle to break away, and then just it's the same old like mood brood, and then
how many times is the villain going to show up, maim and injure and or kill one of the main characters, and oh my god, they're getting held down under the villain's thumb, and how are they going to rise up and beat back the villain and win the day?
Yeah,
like there's only so many times you can do that,
right? And that's unfortunately been something that The Walking Dead had perfected.
Yeah.
No matter where you want to go, the Governor Negan.
You
know, you can take your picks here and there for whenever they landed.
The cannibals for a couple episodes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, wherever you landed as a safe landing spot for the survivors of the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
They are starting to do a little bit of that here, which I did not personally enjoy.
I mean, it's annoying and it's frustrating, but I kind of give them the pass because this isn't an area we're super familiar with.
Right, and that's where I was going with it, too. I get why they're doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not taken out of the show.
Like, if this was still Alexandria or in that area, I'd be like, all right, really? We're just like, why didn't you just do another season of The Walking Dead and call it a day?
Exactly.
But the fact that we're in someplace different, I'm like, okay, I can at least excuse this.
Yeah, I'm just kind of waiting for a little more secrets, a little more shock, if you will.
I imagine they're coming.
I have to imagine they're coming as well. So this one I thought was okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't in love with, but it was solid. Like, I don't want to use the word filler. But for being an intro for where they are now, it kind of had that feeling for me.
Mm-hmm.
But not taking anything away from it overall.
No.
It's worth a watch. So that being said, in 3, 2, 1, Pad, talk to me.
Like I said, I enjoyed the episode. It's kind of middle of the road. You know, I think I enjoyed the first two slightly more.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not saying if like we're using like a ranking point system. It's not like, oh, they're 2 points, 5 points higher. Like it's fairly close to each other. I enjoyed some of the fill-in they did with this and some of the explanations and kind of like backstory we fleshed out a little bit. Because like you said, Rick's been gone a while and we got to figure out where he's been and what he's been up to and how we got to this point. Because, you know, that's the thing with a lot of these television shows is despite the show going on and you not seeing the character, unless they're dead, they're out there doing something. They're out there, something's going on. And if it's integral to the story, well, we got to find out what that is. It's as easy as it would be to just have a line of dialogue explaining the whole thing. Like, you know, somehow Palpatine returned. You know, that's just not a good storytelling device and to see it flesh out, I enjoyed it.
It was solid for what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing that I kept taking away from it. It did not reinvent the wheel for
right.
me.
Right. It didn't blow me away. I didn't go, oh my God, I got to stick around and watch the episode again. That was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
This was the greatest episode in television history. Like, no, it was fun.
It was fun for what it was. A lot of setup, but
yeah.
The end of it really felt the same to me. And that's what kind of took me, you know, if we're talking a grading system, it knocked it down a little bit for me.
Yeah, I agree.
So where it kicks off, I thought was very solid because we do a flashback where Jadis is now approaching Rick
mm-hmm.
in Millennial Park.
Mm-hmm.
So, or Millennium, I have mm-hmm. to remember that. I always say Millennial for yeah. some reason. And you get the little background about what is going on with the CRM
mm-hmm.
and how Rick has gotten there and is now getting used to the ways of the colony, if you will.
And the CRM, at least for you and I, because as we've said before, we did not see all of Worlds Beyond.
Right.
You know, for what we've been exposed to, the more I learn and the more I see with the CRM, the less I like them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they come off, and you see this in, you know, various books and shows and movies, where like they come off as like, oh, we're the white knights. We're the saviors of your humanity, and we're the one slice left of the life you used to know. But as soon as like you open the front door and you start to walk into the entryway of the house, you don't like the setup of the house. It's looking kind of a little run down. The paint's a little chipped, you know, and the further you walk in, the worse it gets.
Yeah. And like I say, this almost had an Alexandria vibe to me.
Yeah.
And or especially the colony that they finished off with.
Yep.
Where everything was perfect and you had that semblance of normalcy in the middle of a zombie apocalypse.
You're almost expecting to walk down the street and see people with those fake smiles on. They're like, hi, everything's fine.
Yeah, like the video for Black Hole Sun.
Yes.
That's the kind, yes. As weird as it sounds, that's how I was feeling watching this.
Or for you Avatar The Last Airbender fans, there is no war in Ba Sing Se.
Yeah.
Like that vibe.
That's where we had here. So, I mean, you have that kind of subtlety... It's Always Sunny in Alexandria kind of vibe, where Jadis is, you know, explaining what's going on and how the CRM is, you know, for the betterment of the people. And Rick is just like, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get out of here. Like, the fact that you've taken me,
yeah.
I'm not happy with.
Yeah.
And he's already plotting, and Jadis is being very loyal to the CRM and keeping an eye on him and scheming and plotting.
He typically doesn't take directions well.
Right.
He'll listen to suggestions and he'll definitely take your advice under consideration. But when it comes to like, you're going to do this because of X, Y, and Z, he may listen for like a couple of weeks, maybe a couple of months. High case in point, see Negan.
Mm-hmm.
But he always like comes to his senses and goes, oh, right. I'm Rick. I'm a Ricktator.
Yeah.
And I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, when he goes to Ricktator mode, that's when everything hits the fan.
Still need that on a shirt.
Yes, we do. I'm surprised we have not had that.
I know.
I digress. AMC, I do know, listens to the show, so hey, we give you a free idea. You could always send us some stuff. It'd be great. But then we jump to the present time, if mm-hmm. you will, and we run into Pearl Thorne, who's mm-hmm. played by Leslie Ann Brandt, because when Rick returns to base,
mm-hmm.
he is now trying to enlist Thorne's help
mm-hmm.
of getting Michonne
mm-hmm.
into their... what's the program?
Consignment program. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a little weird thing, but Jadis is watching everything.
Cause she knows.
Yeah. So she sees that Rick and Michonne are up to something
uh-huh.
and Jadis literally gives the warning like, hey, you're now part of this, whether you want it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if you live or you leave, I'm going to kill everybody
yep.
that you love.
Yep.
Just cause of reasons.
Cause she knows where he lived.
Yeah.
And she's willing to bet they have not left.
Yeah. Which is an odd stance, but,
yeah.
you know, considering where we saw Jadis the first time,
right.
that it's like, you are in a very, very interesting scenario here.
Right. I mean, it's odd, but it also makes sense because this isn't exactly like, you know, The Sopranos,
mm-hmm.
where, hey, you got to listen and do what I say or else I'm going to burn your house to the ground. Yeah. I'm going to, you know, every vehicle or every business you own, I'm going to destroy it. Like, there isn't really any of that. Like, in this world, oh, you're going to burn my house? Oh, that's all right. There's like a million other ones I can move into just as easily and be fine by the end of the week. You know, so you really got to go for like the heartstrings and really go for like, hey, you know, I can't threaten your house or your car because you really don't have those. So I'm going to go for your friends and your family because at the end of the day, that's what you're fighting for.
Well, that's the whole thing. The Jadis knows too much.
Yeah, that's true.
And knowledge is power. And she has almost 9,000 here, if you will.
Well played.
Thank you. So that's ultimately the trump card that she has over Rick. So when the attempt to escape, Rick is saying, I'm going to stay. You go back and warn everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But Michonne is not willing to go.
A little stubborn.
A little stubborn, but we have to think about it. We just had an entire episode of seeing how she risked everything to, to get reunited with
him. She spent like the last 6 years or whatever was trying to find him.
Yeah.
She finally made it back. Yeah. Stubborn, but I get it.
Right. Fully understand. And I was watching this going like, Rick, what are you thinking?
Yeah. You really think she's about to leave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just poor planning on his part. But then again, that's what Rick does best.
Yeah, that's true.
Just putting it out there, folks. It's honest. So we do skip from the scene after Michonne says she's not leaving with him. After the big escape attempt fails, she goes back to Millennium Park, runs into the person responsible for the artistry on the iPhones.
And he's very familiar with her story and her family.
Yeah, so he knows a lot of details.
Which I was not. They didn't really dwell on too much. I don't like it.
Yeah, that was a little like...
It made my skin crawl a little bit.
Yeah.
Like ooh, my spidey senses are tingling.
Yeah, that was just a little TMI.
Mm-hmm.
Especially...
Because it wasn't even just like, oh, yeah, you're Michonne. You're the one Rick had me draw on the iPhone. It's like, oh, yeah, and Judith and everybody else. And like he just starts naming names, and I'm like, how the fuck you know this?
It had a vibe of The Truman Show.
Ooh.
That's what I caught from it.
And yeah.
If you've ever known that movie, you'll understand that. And I'm just sitting there going, like, they know an awful lot about Rick. So is Rick telling everybody? And, I mean, that would be a Rick move if he did.
Yeah, it would.
But I'm going, like, that is just way, way too much.
Yeah.
So Michonne, though, is, like, inspired by this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, obviously, being reminded of the family and kind of what she's given up and what she's fighting for, like, a reassurance.
Mm-hmm.
I liked how the scene played out. I thought Denai Guerrero did very solid with this.
Yeah.
But then they shift things to the Echelon briefing, which the CRM is like telling everything.
Yeah. All of a sudden they're on the up and up.
Yeah. Okay. How did you feel about this playing out?
Felt weird.
Yeah.
Didn't necessarily know why the hell they were doing it, but I'm like, all right, I'll just ride along for the ride here.
It's the weirdest sales pitch.
Yeah.
That after all this time of like, we're forcing you to stay,
but
wait, here's why. Yeah, it's like,
what's behind door number two?
Exactly. So it's like, it's not really making a ton of sense.
I think it was just the CRM management, if you will, realizing, all right, we're selling them a line of shit. And they know if it looks like shit, it smells like shit, it's probably shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to be at least, you know, maybe not pull the curtain back all the way.
Yeah.
But pull it back enough that, like, okay, they can trust us a little bit.
And, you know, the one who buys into it is Thorne.
Of course.
Because Thorne is just saying they're going, like, basically, this is how I'm getting up. Because, like, this ultimately trickles down because Thorne relays this to everybody else after. Because, like I say, Thorne's getting, you know, is not sure exactly if that's what she wants to do, but winds up doing it. But it's like, hey, there's a whole point to this.
Right.
And, like I say, it's just like how much the CRM is playing everybody here.
Yeah.
And that's what throws it off. Because, like I say, when Thorne's meeting with them in that meeting, and getting all that information.
Right.
Like, it just kind of feels like, you know, you're talking to the viewers, but you're also talking to Rick and Michonne, too. Because, like, everybody seems to know too much.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I'm kind
of
going.
A lot of people outside of Michonne know a lot, and that does not include us.
Yeah. So they get brought into this whole idea of going on a mission. Because, obviously, the CRM is very tactical about clearing out paths for walkers. And they do go on this retreat, so to speak, and have to go clear some out. But this is where Thorne is trying to give instructions. And it's kind of, I don't know if it was just me. You can explain this, Pat. Do you get a sense they're trying to force a love triangle here?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Or something weird. Yeah.
There was something weird about Thorne's mannerisms after the meeting where, like, she's now trying to recruit Michonne for this mission after she sees how Michonne is killing walkers at the brickyard where everybody is blown away of how fast she's killing people because reasons
she's Michonne's there and whoever was she working with Thorne I can't remember but whoever she was there working with is like oh my god what do I do and Michonne's like bam 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 like drops like three or four walkers while it's taking the armed military, you know, because they're in body armor with assault rifles and the whole nine. They're like methodically walking slowly to approach their target and make sure they get the perfect kill. And Michonne just goes, you know, samurai warrior on them and just goes, bam, bam, drops them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like, oh my God, you know how to handle yourself.
Yeah, like I say, when they start talking about that after the fact, because it's Rick and Thorne walking around.
Yeah.
And they see that, and so they're all trying to play that, oh, like, Rick doesn't know Michonne. And, like, they telegraph that a little bit, so when mm-hmm. she comes on the mission, it's like, oh, what happens here? So right. this is probably the part of the episode, though, I thought made the most sense.
Yeah, I agree.
If you will, because once they go on this big Walker extinction event,
uh-huh.
Michonne is trying to break away.
Uh-huh.
And she's told to stay back by this, like, battling ram-type device they have.
Something weird like that, yeah.
It was like, I don't know, third-rate Mad Max. I'm sorry, like, I'm going to be honest about it. It just was like...
I got a lot of Mad Max vibes from this episode.
Yeah, like, for being such a technological savvy
mm-hmm.
Establishment, the CRM had a lot of, like, hodgepodged... weaponry
mm-hmm.
just thrown together. Like, yeah. I can understand.
Well, I mean, it kind of calls back to, I forget what season it was, of Walking Dead, where they started noting that, like, hey, like, it's great we have all of these weapons. We have all of these guns, but, like, nobody is making them anymore because of the way the world is. So that's when they turn around and they start having to make their own bullets.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's just a callback to that. Like, hey, we've got all this stuff, and yeah, that's all great and all, but, like, it does deteriorate. It does decay. Like, stuff rusts and doesn't work. So stuff is going to be MacGyvered together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is, like... a weird setup, mm-hmm. but this is where you see that Rick and Michonne are, like, trying to do their other break again.
Yeah.
And they wind up, because Michonne decides to break rank and start pushing this. It looked like, seriously, a Dalek from Doctor Who.
Yeah, something like that.
Just like in a wheelbarrow. Like, it's a weird, yeah. You have to see it to get a full adjustment. That's the easiest description I can give it. So we see this going forward. Rick decides to go help. They're going through everything. It looks like they're going to make the breakaway. And then, like, Rick gets cold feet again.
Mm-hmm.
And during this, you see Thorne is like, I'm done with Michonne. And has this, like, weird look on her eye.
Mm-hmm.
And she is trying to line up a kill shot. Rick catches wind and, like, jumps in front.
His spidey sense goes off.
Yeah. Which, I mean, plays into the dramatic of, you know, their relationship and all that.
Uh-huh.
So, obviously, Thorne doesn't kill her, but they set off the Dalek, as we'll call it, taking out everybody else. So, more or less, Rick is considered a hero of the day.
Yep.
During this time, allegedly, the relationship is done, too, because Rick is trying to break up to protect her.
For now.
Yeah, for now. So, I mean, like I gotta say, I don't even put stock into it. Like, that was a scene that came off like, come on, really?
I agree.
But the end result is, when Rick goes back to the Echelon briefing, like I said, they had a couple of them this episode, which was very telling. Like I say, so I apologize if I got that confused earlier. It's just, they did this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised at it. So when Rick is there and they're talking about, like, the leadership of the group, he gets a weird endorsement by Major General Beale, played by Terry O'Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
And Rick is, you know, going to be moving up. And they're basically, like, very impressed with his work.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems very odd because... Beale has always been very skeptical of Rick.
Yep.
So suddenly he's won him over?
I think he's been given some information that is beneficial to the CRM's benefit.
Mm-hmm. So,
or cause, I should say.
Yeah. But before that can happen, though,
mm-hmm.
they're supposed to get, like, this helicopter ride.
Of course, got a Raven style.
Mm-hmm. And so before that, he can have that summit with the entire CRM camp.
Mm-hmm.
Michonne gets on this helicopter. And basically, grabs her and Rick and jumps off the plane.
Hey, hi, how you doing? Come here, let me talk to you for a second. Yoink.
Yep. And literally, that's how the episode ends.
Oh, of course.
So, like I say, it's just absolutely insane because, like, for the return trip there, everybody knows they're going to be missing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what are you going to be doing there?
They're going to be missing. They're going to know where they went off. So you better start hauling ass because they're going to be around your tails.
Yeah. So it was a weird ending spot. I understand why it did. And I apologize, it's a little confusing, but it's just like they kind of tied in a lot. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel that for this episode, like, it was solid in the acting. I will say that. Like, it had no issue with that. I thought Danai Gurira really had a strong episode.
Right.
In comparison to everybody else on the show. But I thought they played way too much in these Echelon briefings. I thought that we did a lot of the same stuff that we've normally done. And just like the fact that we're trying to do an overdramatic thing with Michonne.
Yeah.
You know, like throwing her and Rick off the helicopter.
Because reasons.
Yeah, like, all right, guys, come on. So I think overall it was solid for what it needed to be.
Yeah.
Wasn't blown away by it, but like I say, I thought it was solid for where it was, but it left me wanting a little more out of this.
Mm-hmm.
I thought once it got streamlined, I don't know about you, Pat.
I thought it was an okay ending. Wasn't the greatest. Could have been a little better, but I'm here for the ride.
Yeah, I'm here for the ride too as well. Like I thought, like now that we're in present time, we got a lot of wiggle room to move.
Yeah.
And just, I really wanted to get down more to business, more streamlining a few things.
Yeah.
I understand, though, it's like they got to do multiple briefings because now since Rick is rising in the ranks, but still it's very confusing catching up with that.
Right.
But now that they're back on the run, it's going to be anybody's fair guess. But with three more episodes, obviously we've got a lot of room to talk.
We shall see.
We shall see indeed. So hit us up on the hashtag ODPagePod. What is your thoughts about The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, episode 3 entitled Bye? Did you like it? Did you hate it? And why? Let's talk about it, shall we? We're going to take a quick break first, though. We'll be right back.
Hey all, I'm Frank. Join me and my friends as we talk about all things geek. Here at Geek Freaks Podcast, we go over the weekly news of everything in geekdom, from movies to TV, video games, and comic books. We also have a growing YouTube community. Join us as we go over everything in your geek life and share in the love of geekdom.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH Podcast, and we have to recap a double shot this week,
yeah,
of one of the Star Wars universe's favorite shows. The fans have really been into it, and unfortunately, this is a swan song for it, as it has been announced that it is the final season. Mm-hmm. And Pad, what is that show?
Season 3 of Star Wars, The Bad Batch.
Yes, the spinoff in the Rebels universe.
The spinoff of the Clone Wars
universe. The Clone Wars
universe. It's all one universe, it's all one story, but it's the continuation.
Yes. And the story of the unique group of clones that were considered, well, not up to snuff.
Defective.
Yes, have now made it their mission to take down the Empire by any means necessary.
Or at least be a thorn in their side.
Mm-hmm. And they have been escalating business throughout their two seasons. Now going into the back-to-back episodes, Clone Force 99 has definitely got their work cut out for them. Mm-hmm. So we are going to be talking spoilers about episodes 6 and 7, Infiltration and Extraction. Much like the first segment that we did with The Walking Dead, we give spoiler free, then we give that countdown, and then you know, all bets are off. So, Pad, let's talk about Infiltration and Extraction, shall we?
Thought there were two good episodes. You know, not the best, but they were enjoyable. I can see why they did them back to back.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it all kind of feels like one big episode and one big story. And if they did in the typical, you know, weekly response, it wouldn't have been as strong. It would have been a little weaker. But I still enjoyed it.
It was very, very good. Like,
yeah,
it was a one shot that they obviously ran over time.
Yeah.
Like, that's the feeling of this.
Yeah, they reached the end of the first part, you know, Infiltration, and realized, oh, hey, there's more story to tell here.
Yeah.
Let's do another one.
Yeah, so it made perfect sense to do it back to back.
Yeah.
Because originally I thought it was going to be a bigger event than it was going to be.
So did I, yeah.
But it was solid for what it was. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not bad. It was really a strong one shot, one deal.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with what they were doing here. I'm interested to see, obviously, we do have a lot more episodes to go because it's going to be taken up right to May 4th week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one that, you know, if they took a little break here to do, I think it's more of a setup for down the road, though.
Could be.
Like, that's the vibe I got from
this.
So we'll definitely have to wait to see how this all plays out. But let's get into that spoiler talk and really deep dive. So in 3, 2, 1, Pad, talk to me.
If you watch them back to back, I think it's a stronger viewing. But if you only watch one, go do something else and then come back and watch the second one a couple days later, it might not be as strong.
Agreed.
You know, so, but that being said, it was a fun episode. You know, I'm going to call it one episode because that's essentially what it was. You know, I enjoyed it. Interesting setup. Like you said, it's probably a setup for something down the road, because a lot of times, most often with Star Wars, especially the animation department, what seems like filler, what may seem like a throwaway little thing that they just included for story or plot purposes for that episode, probably going to come back into factor down the road. Mm-hmm. So we will see.
We'll definitely see, because obviously coming into this, we had a big return last episode.
Mm-hmm.
And who was that, Pad?
That would be Crosshair coming back into the fold after being outside of the fold for about two seasons.
Mm-hmm. So now with the addition of Crosshair to the team, they have now made a point to go and free their cloned, how would you describe
brothers.
Thank you. I was going to say, like, the cloned colony of, you know, the troopers that they're part of. Because, obviously, they know the Empire's up.
Yeah.
And they know that, obviously, with what's been going on, they're trying to be very proactive about this. Mm-hmm. So this leads them to where we are now, because with the information in hand, the batch is out for blood, if you will. So where this kicks off, we do have Ave Singh, who is a former senator of Raxus.
Raxus, yeah. One of the old planets from Expanded Universe coming into the canon.
Yeah, I was going to
say. First time, I think this is from the stuff I've read and watched, I think this is the first mention of Raxus, which is awesome to see personally.
Yeah, I was going to say, this was all really new to me.
Yeah.
So when you do see that Avi is meeting with Ryo Chichui?
Chuchi was a former senator. I don't know if she's still a senator, but she was a senator under the Galactic Republic. So before the Empire rose up, she was with the planet Pantora. Which, fun fact, you do see them in the films. There is a blink and you miss it cameo from George Lucas in episode 3, where he is playing Senator Chuchi's father.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit of connection.
So we do see that Rex and company are guarding Abe. And during this attempt or this meeting, well, somebody tries making a kill.
Yeah, because this is obviously very still early stages of the Empire, you know, they're still using clone troopers, you know, that's kind of the tell of where they are in the storyline without overtly saying a year, because they don't like, you can keep track and there's stuff in universe to keep track of where it is, but like they don't ever outright say it. It's always a visual thing. That's how we kept track in Clone Wars of how close they were getting to episode 3 was when the armor changed and when X, Y, and Z changed. The one clear tell of where they are, at least in the timeline from between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, is early on in the Empire's days, they were still using clones. Obviously, when you get to A New Hope, well, there are no clones serving in the Empire. It's all humans. So still early in the days of the Empire. And yet, as we know, there are some folks who are not entirely thrilled with what the Empire does or what they're about, and they want to do something about it. So you've got these two former senators, at least one's a former senator, still unclear about the other one. But they're talking about a rebellion movement against the Emperor.
Yeah.
Or they're trying to.
But obviously, with somebody trying to make a death happen, it's not going that well. But the attack does not go off as planned. And the said assassin is captured by Rex and company. And he is obviously
He's a clone.
He's a clone that they want to press for some information.
He didn't sell out. He bought in.
Yes, he did. But obviously, knowing who sent him, another clone is sent to go clean up the mess, so to speak.
There's always a cleanup guy.
So during this, Rex's people find a listing for Omega.
It's basically a hit list.
Yeah.
And Omega's on the list.
So that is going to cause a little bit of a red flag.
Yeah, because she's a little bit unique. The first female clone that they know of, or at least they're aware of. And obviously there's a lot pressed about her. And as we, the viewer, know, I don't think Rex knows at this point, or maybe he does. It seems like he's been in contact with the Bad Batch crew off screen. He sees this list and goes, oh, we need to tell Hunter and crew.
Yeah, so Rex gets in contact with the Batch to his base on Teth. And this is kind of where we have a little bit of a meeting of the minds, so to speak, because you do have Omega and Crosshair are just relaying about, you know, what they know about the Imperials' practices, if you will, and their assassin division.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely wild. So once word breaks about one is in custody, Crosshair has a little bit of like, hey guys, just want to tip you off a little bit.
Yeah.
And what is the information pad?
There's a secret tracking implant inside the operative.
Yeah.
And like, hey, they can see where he is. And should note, if this exterior of this base looked familiar, it's because it is the same monastery that was from the Clone Wars movie.
Ooh.
Where Anakin and Ahsoka rescued Jabba's son.
Hmm.
I'm looking at this. I'm like, this looks fucking familiar. And then I looked online and Teth was mentioned. I'm like, oh, that's right. Teth.
Great catch right there.
Thank you.
But unfortunately, the...
Too little, too late.
Yeah, too little, too late, because the assassin that was meant to do cleanup work does it
and
takes out the captive prisoner and decides to blow up the base on the process.
Because, hey, you're all on the wanted list.
So,
and I can get paid extra.
Exactly. So it's like, I've hit the lottery. I just got to take everybody out with me. So, hey, it works. So the base is blown up. And an Imperial team is now deciding to go clean up all the scraps possible. And who is leading that team?
Commander Wolf, who fan favorite, one of Dave Filoni's favorites also, because Filoni's a big Wolf fan, so hey, Commander Wolf. But he was the clone commander under Plo Koon of the Jedi Council. Plo Koon. He was the one with the mask, if you remember that Jedi. But yeah, he served under him, and he's clearly still buying what the Empire's selling. But he is en route, and he wants Omega.
Yes. So while he's en route, of course, Rex and company are trying to go through the base, and obviously knowing that, well, we have people now coming after them. So it's kind of making for a little pressing issue here.
Like, we need to GTFO ASAP.
Yeah. So they get on a shuttle, and they're ready to escape.
But the assassin shoots, the second assassin shoots the vessel down.
Number two makes a number one shot right into the engine. That's the easiest way you could describe it.
Pretty much, yeah.
And causes this big crash. And obviously, this is now not playing into the favor of our favorite clones.
The good guys.
Yes. So we do see that there are more people chasing them. Yep. And number two, we will just call him number two because I don't think he ever got an official name.
No, I don't think he did.
Number two is probably the smartest one here. I'm going to put it out here.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to go after anybody... Oh, he decides to go after Crosshair.
Well, of course.
Yeah. Even though Crosshair...
Birds of a feather.
Yeah, who has been a little shaky, let's not lie, because you know, his conscience is his guide, and his guide is saying, like, what are you doing
here? He's conflicted.
Yeah, he's now apparently conflicted again. Reasons.
Yeah.
But number two decides, well, you know what? I'm going to take care of Crosshair, because if I take care of him, I...
All my problems are solved.
Yeah, so they
never mind, I'm outnumbered if it's me versus them.
Yeah, which I love the tenacity.
Yeah, hey, can't fault him.
No, so they get in this big fight over by this waterfall because obviously they're running through the land here. And the fight sequence, very, very cool. Got to put it out there.
Fight sequences from the animation crew, always good.
Yeah, so they make their point to do it. And even at 1.2, it looks like Crosshair is dead.
Yeah.
Because he's choking him underwater.
Yeah.
Which was a little interesting to see.
There are a lot of times Star Wars animation is not for kids.
Yeah.
This is one.
Yeah, I sat there and was like, well, we didn't have a rating on this, but let's rock and roll, shall we? Unfortunately, a blast kind of knocks him off a little bit, if I'm not mistaken. And we do see that, well, when the extraction point hits, well, Commander Wolf decides to roll up.
Yeah.
And they're kind of having a meeting because obviously when they're making a big explosion here going on, you know, we do see Crosshair does pull off the escape or rescue, shall we say, because they did find him even though he was dead, in my opinion. And this is where Wolf is kind of having the one-on-one about everything going on. And the softer side catches up with him.
Yep.
So he decides to say, all right, Rex, you guys do what you got to do. We're going to pretend we didn't see you. And I thought that was kind of an interesting set.
Yeah, well, I think it's the whole thing with them is like, yes, Wolf and his crew are trying to do the right thing, but also like Rex is, well, that one, they thought Rex was dead. And they're like, holy shit, you're alive. And he's like, yeah, well, no, I kind of was, but I survived the crash.
Yeah.
And then he appeals to Wolf's, you know, human side, you know, his emotions, whatever you want to call it, and goes, hey, listen, I realize you have a job to do, but like they didn't tell you all of the stuff to do with the job.
Right.
Like here's the info they didn't give you. And Wolf's like, what? Like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we understand.
So the parting words is everybody keep Omega safe because reasons.
Well, they have to find, and they also have to find out why the hell the Empire wants her so badly out of every person in the universe.
Yeah.
And let's not forget Project Necromancer.
Yeah.
And there was also the mention, I think it was mentioned in one of these two episodes. I know it was mentioned earlier in the season. M-Count was mentioned. In case you don't know what M-Count is, I know I'm going to make some people cringe, but it all ties into what they're trying to do. Midi-chlorians.
Oh,
and midi-chlorians are what helped the Jedi use the Force, and Omega's got a really high midi-chlorian count.
Unless, of course,
just saying,
she is Palpatine. Dun dun dun. Kidding, folks.
That'd be a
kidding.
Hell of a twist.
I was gonna say that'd be an insane twist. But overall, I mean, this was a pretty straightforward story.
Yeah, they're setting up a lot.
They did a lot of setup. Number two, I'm kind of curious if he's actually dead.
Yeah,
because going over the waterfall.
I was trying to figure out who he was, because like I figured, because this would be something out of Filoni's playbook, is like have it be a bounty hunter or somebody we've seen prior coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was thinking, and then for Clone Wars, I thought it might have been like Rako Hardeen, who was played in a season 5 or 6 or whatever it was, mm-hmm. maybe 4, one of the later seasons of Clone Wars. I was trying to figure out who it was, but they never said who it was, or you never heard the voice, so I don't know if the character even got credited. So maybe we'll find out somewhere down the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're definitely going to. I mean, I don't know who it would be. They didn't really kind of dive into it.
Well, I can tell you this. It ain't Boba.
No. I was going to say it's not the king.
It's not Boba.
No. I mean, I don't think it's Cad Bane either.
That's right. He shows up. It's fairly obvious. He is not subtle in any way, shape, or form when it comes to entering a room.
Mm-hmm. No, he's definitely not.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a little crazy to see how, you know, this all played out. Like I say, their fight sequence was great.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how they did fall. It was an explosion, right?
I believe that
broke
yeah.
them up.
Yeah.
Because I know it just happened like in a split
yes,
second.
Yes, it was. No, yeah, it was. Because at one point, when they were, when Crosshair was fighting the bounty hunter, number two.
Yeah.
He used his sniper rifle or whatever you want to call it and like flipped an attachment on and shot a mine. On the other side on the other side of the wall, and I was like, "Holy shit, that's awesome! I've never seen that before." And whatever the other guy was standing on, like, fell out from underneath him.
That's right.
Yeah.
See, because I knew it was an explosion, but I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
Just
no, he shot a mine out of his gun, which I got him in all the years I played Star Wars video games and Call of Duty.
Nobody ever
games.
Thought about doing that.
I've never seen that done.
Yeah.
Grenade launchers, sure, but fucking shooting mines out of your gun.
Yeah.
Hi, Asper Media. Add that to the Battlefront game.
We definitely need to see that. But that's like I say, that was probably the fight scene I was going to say was one of my highlights.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah, and number two did his thing.
Yeah.
Number two implemented his will.
Yeah.
Like in every good villain, and that's why I say I think he's coming back.
Probably.
I don't know who he would be, though. Like
I think he is because he got up at the end.
Yeah, because I was going to say, he didn't die.
He didn't, and that's even the thing with Star Wars is even when you see somebody die cut in half, they still can come back.
Right.
But no, he was presumed dead, but then the final shot of the episode was at the bottom of the waterfall or whatever the hell it was. Him get it, like the body was there and you're like, oh shit, hey, he's dead. And then he starts to like slowly get up and you're like, oh shit, okay, he's not dead.
Yeah. So I definitely want to see more of that character.
I do too.
And I thought it was pretty straightforward because it was just really more to hype up about Omega.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Which, listen, that's where the Bad Batch is going, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because obviously with the Project Necromancer, there's a lot of moving parts involved.
Mm-hmm. And I know there's some speculation. Oh, we're going to see Snoke before the end of the season. That makes absolutely no goddamn sense.
Yeah, you're not seeing Smoke.
But just timeline-wise, because you got to remember, this is before the events of the original trilogy.
Right.
So Palpatine's not even dead at this point. Now, I'm not saying we couldn't see like an early concept form. Like
sure.
If they took something from the early concept art of Snoke and turned that into a failed clone, sure, could see that. But in terms of seeing like a fully fledged working Snoke, no. That's more likely to be seen in the Mandalorian movie, the Mandalorian and Grogu. That's more likely to see.
Yeah, so overall, though, like I say, we had two solid episodes back to back.
Yeah.
I do agree with you. You need to watch them in one sitting.
Yes.
So
it's about 40, 45 minutes.
Yeah, bank that much time. I did the same thing, too. But
after
hearing how you put it, it's like, yeah, no, if you tried separating and watching it later.
It's not going to be as good.
No, it's not. You need to watch it in one sitting. It's like a great two-part story from a comic.
Yeah.
And it plays out very well. I was super excited about it. And like I say, this was Star Wars storytelling at that bar that they've set with their animation.
Yeah.
So if you haven't checked out The Bad Batch, you definitely want to make sure you do it. And then after you do it, well, hit us up on that hashtag OGPagePod. What is your thoughts about Infiltration and Extraction, episodes 6 and 7 of season 3 of Star Wars The Bad Batch, currently airing on Disney+. Let's talk about it, shall we? But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Scott Snyder, and you better listen to the ODPH podcast, or I'm coming for you, and Batman is coming for you.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Pat, what you got?
Got a couple things to talk about, the first of which is an update on a Star Wars movie that a lot of people thought was dead in the water. Looks to be back to life, though, and that is the Star Wars movie Rogue Squadron.
Really?
So this, according to an article on Variety.com,
okay.
The article reads, quote, Patty Jenkins' Star Wars movie Rogue Squadron might not be dead after all. The project, centered on fighter pilots in the Star Wars universe, was first announced at the end of 2020 and was put on the calendar for a December 2023 theatrical release. By September 2022, however, Disney had pulled the title from its release schedule. Variety reported last May that Rogue Squadron was no longer in active development at Lucasfilm.
Okay.
In a new interview on the Talking Pictures podcast, Jenkins announced that she is now once again in development on the script for Rogue Squadron, following the dissolution of her planned Wonder Woman 3 at Warner Brothers and DC Studios. Variety has reached out to Lucasfilm for comment. Quote, When I left Star Wars to do Wonder Woman 3 and I started working on that, we talked about, well, maybe I'll come back to Star Wars after Wonder Woman 3. So we started a deal for that to happen, Jenkins said. When Wonder Woman 3 then went away, Lucasfilm and I were like, oh, we've got to finish this deal. We finished the deal right as the strike was beginning, so I now owe a draft of Star Wars. So we will see what happens there. Who knows? They have a hard job in front of them. What's the first movie they're going to do? Jenkins added about Lucasfilm. They have other directors who have been working, but I am now back on doing Rogue Squadron. We'll see what happens. We need to get it to where we're both super happy with it. Close quote. Rogue Squadron is still not yet confirmed to be officially happening, but Jenkins is working on a script for it. She said she would absolutely be absolutely happy to make it, adding, quote, the emotion of Star Wars and what it stands for is something so beautiful in this world. If I can do something beautiful and do something that serves that audience, I would love to do it, close quote. So I am all for a Rogue Squadron movie. If you've played the video games over the years, you know how good that story can be.
Mm-hmm.
Make it like Top Gun Maverick, but in Star Wars, and like you've got a hit on your hands. You can do no wrong with this movie.
You know, it's funny. We talked in the first segment about projects that until I'm in a theater watching and they're actually physically watching.
Sure.
That is up there.
No, I agree with you.
So, I mean, I'm optimistic. I mean, it sounds like it's got promise, but it's been so tied up that you know, and like I say, I'm adding that to the list of like I need to be there to watch it.
Sure. And then we got to talk about a trailer that came out last week for a show coming out on April 11th to Amazon Prime Video, and that is Fallout Show. And I got to say, this looks really goddamn good. You know how a lot of people say video game adaptations are a little hit or miss. This one looks like a hit. I know that from what I understand, this is not going to be an adaptation of one of the games, but it is going to be set in the same universe as the games.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see some of the same characters appear. You'll see some crossover and stuff. And I do know that the head of Bethesda did give the creators of the show like, hey, here's a list of stuff you can't really do because we've got plans for this.
Yeah.
So it looks like there's a little bit of cohesion and operating between the two sides of like, hey, let's make this all one big happy universe. And you know what? That could make it a lot of fun.
It definitely could. Like
yeah, it looks good.
It looked good. I have to agree with you. I mean, I've never been a big fan of the franchise, but it looked intriguing.
Sure.
And obviously we got to talk some comics. And as we are recording, there is some breaking news from Marvel.
They waited for us.
Well, they did. And shout out to Marvel for sending us the press release. It had been talked about at South by Southwest that there was going to be some major news coming out.
Okay.
We finally got clarification about what to expect after the Crocaean Age in X-Men.
Which is coming very soon.
Very soon, because once we get to X-Men 35, which Legacy, it's 700.
Right.
The Krakoan era is done. And we do know that it's wrapping up. Obviously, there's two series going on right now, Rise of the Powers of Ten, Fall of the House of X. Both are going on simultaneously.
Right.
Leading into that issue, then where we're going from here is really up in the air until today. Because at South by Southwest, there was a big meeting going on, panel, and it was announced that we have three books coming out starting in July. First one, X-Men, written by Jed McKay and Ryan Stegman.
Mm-hmm.
According to the press release from Marvel, Krakoa is no more, but the X-Men fight on from their new base in Alaska. The X-Men raises a flag in defiance, joins Cyclops, Beast, Magneto, who, if you see the promo art for this, is sitting in Xavier's chair.
But he c- colored it Magneto colors.
Yes, he did.
And he's also wearing a suit.
He looks badass as all can be.
I'm not going to lie. This cover art or the promotional art, I want as a poster.
Ryan Stegman, I believe, drew it.
Yeah, yes, he did. Ryan Stegman and Marte Garcia.
Yeah, it looks phenomenal. We have it up on odphpodcast.com right now, or on the Facebook page. And I will try getting it on the website, too, as soon as we're done with this. But going back, so Magneto's on the team. Psylocke, Kid Omega.
Oh, boy.
Temper, Magic, and Juggernaut. And if you see the design for Juggernaut.
That's a good design.
That's freaking awesome. Yep. As they assemble against new forces battling the destiny and philosophy of the mutant species, mutant business is their business, end quote.
Not really surprised Cyclops is teaming up with Magneto.
No, I'm not either.
Especially these days.
Well, you know, the thing about it is, where they left off before the Krakoan era, there was that kind of weird parallel that was going on.
Yeah.
So depending on how everything wraps up with Krakoa, I could see how this plays into effect a little bit. But if they're really taking on the big problems, especially from being based in Alaska, too, which I thought was very intriguing.
Definitely an interesting choice.
It definitely is. I'm super excited. I think the creative team is going to really do some awesome things. The one that jumps out to me, though, just because I'm a big fan of her work, Uncanny X-Men, written by the one and only Gail Simone.
Oh, boy.
Art by David Marquez, going for the Marvel Press release once again. Outlaw heroes, once again, the X-Men embark on a new mission, making themselves home in the Big Easy. So they're going to be stationed in New Orleans.
Given who's on the team, that does not surprise me.
The X-Men protect a world that hates and fears them. Join Rogue, Gambit, Nightcrawler, Jubilee, and Wolverine on explosive superhero adventures, uncanny as ever. The X-Men are back to saving the day, mutant style, end quote.
So Nightcrawler is going to be the voice of reason on that team, right?
Yep.
Because everyone else is going to be a little hot-headed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? Like I say, that is probably the most classic lineup in recent memory.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. I'm not the big Jubilee fan. Sorry, Stu from SWO Productions, but I'm actually excited to see her on the team. So I think that one's going to be a real strong book that is due out in August. And then the one that I will admit has got my attention because I'm not sure what to expect with this one.
A little different.
Exceptional X-Men, written by Eve L. Ewing and art by Carmen Carnero, who actually is doing the art in this week's Amazing Spider-Man 45.
Hey.
So going by the Marvel press release one more time, mutant kind's two greatest teachers mold the next generation of X-Men. Kate Pryde has returned home to Chicago following the war with Orcus. Having stepped away from the world of mutantdom, she is nevertheless called back into action as she crossed paths with a trio of new young mutants, Bronze, Exo, and Mealy, who clearly need training and guidance. Unfortunately for Kate, Emma Frost thinks so as well, end quote.
Fucking hell.
Oh, my God. Give this to me. I'm all in. I'm all in. This is what I've been waiting for as an X-Men fan.
Uh-huh.
Like I say, I love the Krakoan era. I'm one of the few people that really, I thought they did some crazy things with it. Some hit, some didn't.
Yeah.
Some really didn't. How they're wrapping things up, I think, is getting back to basics for X-Men. So
right.
I'm super excited for 700 when that comes out. And then with these books coming out, like I said, X-Men number one is going to be coming out July 10th. Uncanny X-Men number one is August 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Exceptional X-Men number one is September 4th, as it's slated right now. And that is kicking off a slew of new titles because there is another graphic that came out with the press release.
Uh-huh.
And we have some names for it, Pad.
Yeah, so obviously on the promotional art, you see the names of the books we just mentioned. But at the bottom are some presumably other books we're going to get and some possible solo series. Of the names, you have X-Factor, X-Force, Wolverine, Storm, Nyx, and Phoenix.
Yeah, NYX, which, if I'm not mistaken, I think that might be Laura Kenny.
Probably.
And that was a throwback to the original series she came and debuted from. So, overall, I mean, Pat, what are you thinking about this?
This looks like a lot of fun. This has got some potential. The Krakoan Age has been a lot of fun. Good rebound and bound jumping off for X-Men if you haven't read X-Men in a while. And to see them kind of lead out of this and see where things go, I'm interested.
I'm all in. Gail Simone coming back to write this. This is a take my money moment.
Yeah.
Now. So, like, yeah. But I'm excited for all three books, to be honest with you. And then whatever's going to come out of the other books that is slated, NYX, I think that could be a really interesting series.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling it's Laura Kenny, but I'm not 100% sure. X-Force has been really good with Ben Piercy writing it.
Right.
Obviously, I don't think it's going to be the same one that we saw during the Krakoan era.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine, I imagine Piercy's writing that, which, I mean, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So that says it all right there. X-Factor, that could be, no pun intended, the big X-Factor.
Yeah.
I think that that could be a lot of different things. I'm assuming with Phoenix, that could be Jean Grey. That could be maybe something completely different. I don't know.
Presumably, it's going to be Jean.
And, you know, if they do a Storm regular ongoing, I'm completely on board with that, too.
Yeah.
But like I said, this feels like the X-Men line. I don't want to see the line go any bigger than 10 books.
Yeah.
It's like that's a lot to ask for fans. Like, trust me. But super excited to see all this kick off. I know that there is going to be something involving Free Comic Book Day involving this.
Yes.
So definitely we'll be talking about that more as we get closer to that day in May. But a lot of things to be super, super excited about with this. And like I say, if more information about that, stay tuned to odphpodcast.com and Nerd Initiative. We'll be talking about it there very, very heavily throughout the weekend here. So that being said, we did allude to some comics, and I did allude to an Amazing Spider-Man 45 pad.
You did, and that's one of the books I'm going to be poking up this week. Zeb Wells is still writing it. Carmen Carnero is the artist, as you mentioned. John Romita is on the cover. The description of this reads, "The gang war is over, but New York City will bear the scars for a long time. While Peter was fighting the war, other parts of his life kept going on, and the consequences will be felt here. Plus, what mystery is bubbling up at Ravencroft?"
Hmm.
Now, you mentioned Ravencroft. Usually not good.
It's never good.
Never good. Then we got a trio of Star Wars books I'm picking up this week. First of which is Star Wars Darth Vader, issue number 44 from Greg Pak. This one reads, quote, "Rise of the Markhors. Darth Vader is picking up the pieces after the Scourge wreaked havoc, but could a rebel squad of cyborgs bring chaos to the Dark Lord of Order? Who are Vader's new troopers? Find out here." And I gotta admit, a little intrigued by this book.
Yeah,
it not really sure what's going on, but I'm in for it.
I'm definitely intrigued by it. I mean, the cover looks insane.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely excited about that.
Then you've got Star Wars Mace Windu, issue number 2 by Mark Bernardin. And this one reads, "Into the Storm Against the Boar Worm." Mace Windu and Azita Cruz must work together to escape the menace of the Boar Worm. But what else lies in their path, and who is following them? And what is Coaxium Ultra? So if you know Coaxium, that's what they use to do the hyperspace and stuff with the traveling through light speed. Coaxium Ultra, probably very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Would say so.
Probably not good. And lastly, certainly not leastly, from the folks over at Dark Horse, you've got Star Wars The High Republic Adventures, issue number 3 from Daniel Jose Older. This one reads, "Zine, Jedi Knight Court, and Droid 5AG3 have been following every clue to find answers about their friends who are missing and presumed dead since the Starlight Beacon disaster. Together with an assemblage of battle-ready Jedi, smugglers, and pirates, they've got a new lead to pursue, and it is taking them straight to a Nihil prison ship. Dare they hope to discover surviving allies there? Find out in issue number 4 of Star Wars The High Republic Adventures from Phase 3 of the High Republic Saga." Close quote. This one, it's the High Republic. I'm all in.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's right up your alley.
And the cover is scarier than shit.
The cover looks, I don't know what is going on there.
Neither do I, but I'm in.
Yeah, no, you definitely got to be all in about that. Uh-huh. You can't pass up on that. That looks damn good. So for me this week, well, we've got a bunch.
Uh-huh.
But I'll definitely give you the short version of it, because if you really want to find out the full details, nerdinitiative.com. Bullpen had a loaded lineup this week, over 25 reviews.
Oh, wow.
So I could really go into full detail, but I'm going to recommend you go check out everybody's work. The ones, though, that I'll give the personal endorsement for, because I had the pleasure of reviewing them, Batman and Robin number 7. So Joshua Williamson, Simone DiMeo is back on the art duties for this one, and this has to be one of my favorite series out right now. I really enjoy this a lot, and it's a very big break from Chip Zdarsky's Batman, which I do like, but this one really... Like, I want to say they put the fun in Batman.
Okay.
Like I say, there's a little more fun sequence. We do see the return of a character, if you're very familiar with one, Damian Wayne. Flatline is back.
Oh, boy.
So it's a very cool twist to the story that's going on. I don't want to give anything too away, even though it's been out for a couple days now. It's still a great series. And what they're doing with Man-Bat, who has been the main protagonist since day one, or antagonist, I should say, this is where we're getting kind of a little idea about what's been moving, and there's a great cliffhanger ending too. Mm-hmm. So really enjoyed this one. Also from Image Comics, Black Market Narrative. You know, if I say Black Market Narrative, Pat, it means only one thing.
It's going to be nuts.
It's going to be Massiverse.
Yes.
And that is where we have issue number 8 of No One.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Higgins, Brian Buccellato, Geraldo Borges is back on this book. He took last issue off. And let me just say this. This has been one of my favorite series out since it debuted. It's crazy to think it's almost been a year now.
That is crazy.
Since it debuted. And this series just keeps getting better and better as it's going. It's only got 2 issues left. Don't know what's going to happen after this, but right. If you like a good mystery, this is here. The book does go into a small, I want to call it like a subplot almost for this right. one. But they do come back to the main sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to take you out of it. It's just something a little add. A very interesting spotlight is shown on one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not expecting it.
Right.
And now I'm like, okay, well, this kind of throws a little wrench in the mechanics here, if you will.
Right.
But with 2 issues left, I'm absolutely blown away by the series. I'm going to put it on record. I still think No One is J.C. Randall,
mm-hmm.
the social media editor at the Pittsburgh Ledger.
Right.
So we'll have to see if I'm right. I put it on social media. If so, like I said, Pat, you have this timestamp.
I do.
I do not know anything. I have the pleasure of knowing all 3 of the top creators here for this book. They have not told me anything. I don't want to know anything. But if I'm right, I'm taking my victory lap, damn it, because this book has just been absolutely lights out. Speaking of lights out, probably the biggest book at the comic shops every time it drops, Transformers number 6.
Yeah.
What they're doing at Skybound Entertainment and Image Comics with the Energon universe has absolutely been clicking on every single cylinder. This one, though, is slightly bittersweet.
Oh, yeah?
Daniel Warren Johnson announced that he is going to be having Jorge Corona taking over for the art duties on the series, which, I mean, listen, that's not a downgrade by any means. I'm just so used to Daniel Warren Johnson's art.
Right.
That, like, I'm so accustomed to him. But thank you to the people over at Skybound Entertainment that sent me over a little preview of what to expect from it. I'm showing Pad the artwork right now.
Oh, that's very nice.
We can't talk about this on air, even though you have seen some social media images go out there. I mean, these are the press photos, but... Corona's art is going to be absolutely lights out too, but it's just kind of bittersweet because I'm so used to seeing Daniel Warren Johnson's stuff and especially how he incorporates pro wrestling moves one way or another into said books has been absolutely a blast. This one is the end of the first arc, ends on a big note. I'll even give it a little spoiler. I gave it a 10 out of 10.
Ooh.
I thought this book was excellent. It's probably my big pickup of the week if you're going to pick up anything this week.
Right.
And that is saying something because it is a loaded lineup this week. So
highly
recommend Transformers number 6 and then get ready for Transformers number 7 when that drops. Obviously with the new art team taking over, but still it's going to be absolute fire. And then from our good friends over at Marvel Comics, we talked to X-Men a little bit. Fall of the House of X number 3. So this is the, I want to say, more grounded story of the end of the Krakoan era.
Okay.
Focusing a lot on what's going on with Cyclops, who was going on trial and presumably execution, and the remaining X-Men are trying to make the save for him. A lot of things happen in this book.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. There's a to say moving parts, I know I throw that statement around a lot.
Right.
That is the easiest way to describe this book. There's a lot. But Jerry Duggan, who's the writer of this, really nails it. And keeps everything very, very balanced. If you've been reading X-Men during the Krakoan era for quite some time, there is a payoff here for one plot that's been going on. And I will admit, since I've read it, I did go, hell yeah, about damn time. So was super excited about that. But the ending pages really throw a twist in everything. So excited to see how we're going to shape this up as we wrap things up with it. But it's been a great series so far. Rise of the Powers of 10 has been excellent too. So I think they're ending everything on Krakoa in a big manner. And then we go right into the reset for the X-Men line. So super excited for that. Last pick for me this week. One of my favorite series. I know Pad will not read it because it's horror.
Hell no.
But the spinoff of Something is Killing the Children, House of Slaughter number 21 is back. And this is getting heavily referred to as the last stand of Jace Boucher.
Oh.
So if you've been following this series since issue number 1, you know Jace is a very tortured soul and is not exactly on the good side of the Order of St. George. And all signs are pointing to a very cataclysmic showdown at the end of this. It will, I'm assuming it's going to be absolutely just mind-blowing when they get done. The one thing about this series is they do a lot of slow burn drama.
Right.
James Tynan is absolutely lights out about this. He's probably the best writer that does this.
Right.
He has an input on this as well, but this is Tate Brombell who's taken the writing duties on this. Antonio Fuzio is on the artwork for this. And listen, this has just been absolutely a blast to read. And this is a lot of setup. I'm going to give a little spoiler here. It's a little setup.
Okay.
More than like action is going on. But once again, they do slow burn drama very, very well. That is what we're getting here.
Okay.
So a lot of great stuff at the comic shops this week. And definitely, if you need more recommendations, nerdinitiative.com, odphpodcast.com, we have you covered. Like I said, nerdinitiative.com, over 25 reviews this week.
Oof.
Between all social platforms. So shout out to the entire bullpen on that. Absolutely killed it this week. And as we say, when we end our comics portion of the show, make sure to go out and support your LCS no matter where you're at, because there's nothing like walking into a comic shop than walking in on Wednesday. Pad, we are going to end this, though, on a very somber note.
Yeah, we got to talk for a minute and give this man his due, because he has certainly earned it in his life, and we have to give a little remembrance to the life and journey of Akira Toriyama.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who are not familiar with the name, Akira Toriyama was the creator of a lot of things, but most notably was the Dragon Ball franchise.
Right.
The news came down and was announced on the Dragon Ball official accounts a week ago today. The letter that was posted on the English Dragon Ball website, although it's on all of their websites, is dated March the 8th. So it was announced on March the 8th over in Japan. But the letter reads, quote, "Dear friends and partners, we are deeply saddened to inform you that manga creator Akira Toriyama passed away on March 1st due to acute subdural hematoma. He was in age of 68. It's our deep regret that he still had several works in the middle of creation with great enthusiasm. Also, he would have many more things to achieve. However, he has left many manga titles and works of art to this world. Thanks to the support of so many people around the world, he has been able to continue to achieve activities for over 45 years.
Wow.
We hope that Akira Toriyama's unique world of creation continues to be loved by everyone for a long time to come. We inform you this sad news with gratefulness for your kindness during his lifetime. Funeral service was held with his family and very few relatives. Following his wishes for tranquility, we respectfully inform you that we would not accept flowers, condolences, gifts, visiting, offerings, and others. Also, we ask you to refrain from conducting interviews with his family. Future plans for commemorative gathering is not decided. We will let you know when it's confirmed. We deeply thank you for your understanding and support as always." And it's signed by Bird Studio and Capsule Corporation, Tokyo. So, of course, Akira Toriyama, and I'm reading a bit from the summary or obituary, I guess you could say, that was written on Crunchyroll.com. It says Akira Toriyama was born in Nagoya, Aichi Prefecture on April 5th, 1955. From a young age, he was inspired by the works of Disney and Osamu Tezuka, with Tezuka's Astro Boy, the series that ignited his love for manga. After graduating from the creative design track at the Aichi Prefectural High School, Toriyama joined a local advertising agency as a designer. Toriyama quit the design job at 23 and, needing money, aimed to submit his first manga to a rookie prize in Kodansha's weekly shonen magazine. Unable to meet the deadline, he instead submitted his first work, Awawa World, to Weekly Shonen Jump's monthly Young Jump Award, which he lost. This gave him the motivation to create his next work and be discovered by Kazukiyo Torishiyama, who became Toriyama's longtime editor on his future works, including Dr. Slump from 1980 to 1984, and the beginning of Dragon Ball, until Torishiyama was promoted to editor-in-chief of V-Jump and then Weekly Shonen Jump. Toriyama would go on to publish Dragon Ball in Weekly Shonen Jump from 1984 to 1995, as well as the one-shot Sandland in 2000 and Jocko the Galactic Patrolman in 2013. Toriyama also provided character design and art for other notable franchises such as Dragon Quest, Chrono Trigger, Blue Dragon, and others, leaving his mark on not only manga, but in video games too. Statements from industry creators such as One Piece creator Ichiro Oda, Dragon Quest game designer Yuji Horii, Video Girl AI creator Masakazu Katsura, and Naruto creator Masashi Kishimoto were posted on Shonen Jump's website following the announcement. Quote, not only manga artists, but for all active industry creatives, the excitement when Dragon Ball was serialized is deeply rooted in their childhood, said Oda. That existence is a great tree for manga artists who came from my generation. The closer I got to Toriyama's works, the more I realized that they had a greater presence. Close quote. As Dragon Ball children, Oda and myself returned to our youth talking about how excited we were about Dragon Ball, like we were competing, said Kishimoto, speaking of the first time the two met Toriyama in person. I won't forget his little embarrassed smile. Close quote. It cannot be understated the impact Toriyama's words had on generations of people around the globe. For many, Dragon Ball was their first entry into anime and manga, helping shape not only fandoms that have continued into adulthood, but also how they are as people and born friendships that have lasted decades. Generations of people collected, cherished, and bonded over stories created by Toriyama. Toriyama's creations will continue to inspire many more for generations to come. His legacy, which includes the, quote, Dragon Ball children that have series currently running serialized across Japan around the world, lives on. Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. Thank you for letting us into your imaginative worlds, close quote. So, yeah, the Dragon Ball children are One Piece and Naruto. Mm-hmm. Because the creators of those franchises, which Naruto, long-running franchise, beloved around the world, One Piece right up there, if not higher than it, depending on who you talk to. But there was just an outpouring of support from around the world. I know Christopher Sabat, who voices Piccolo and Vegeta, among a host of others on the Dragon Ball franchise, tweeted out, "See you in Otherworld, legend, hashtag RIP Akira Toriyama." Of course, for those who don't know, Otherworld is what they call the afterlife in Dragon Ball. Mm. I know that on the official Dragon Ball tweet that got posted out of tweeting out the letter, the Among Us Twitter account posted, quote, a legend. Thank you, Akira Toriyama, for entertaining and inspiring so many of us. Rest in peace. There's just this large outpouring of support. Crunchyroll put out the nice statement. You had a bunch of others scrolling up through. You had the Japanese voice actress who voices Goku, Masako Nozawa-san, released a statement, quote, saying, quote, I don't want to believe it. My head is empty because I don't want to think about it. Even so, every time I see Goku, I remember what Toriyama sensei said to me. You will take care of Goku, won't you? I cherish that moment. It makes me think I will stay by Goku's side until my strength runs out completely. Sensei, please watch over us from the heavens. We hope you depart in peace. Close quote. You had a bunch of others. I know Big E and Xavier Woods of WWE posted photos of, because back at WrestleMania, what was it, 32, I think it was?
I think so.
WrestleMania 32, which was in Dallas, in their faction known as the New Day, they came out dressed as Saiyans, of course, from the Dragon Ball franchise. So that was, they both posted tributes to Toriyama. The PlayStation Twitter account posted a GIF from the Dragon Ball English intro from back in the 90s, saying simply, thank you, Akira Toriyama. Toei Animation posted a statement on there saying, we are deeply saddened upon hearing of the passing of Akira Toriyama. We offer our condolences, our sincere condolences to his family. Within our company, we have many staff members who worked and contributed to masterpieces such as Dr. Slump, Arale, and the Dragon Ball series, and who all deeply respected Toriyama sensei. We are truly grateful for his guidance and contributions to our productions. It was such a great honor for us to be able to adapt the works of such a beloved creator cherished around the world. We offer our prayers for Akira Toriyama's eternal peace. We thank him for all the joy he brought to us all. Close quote. You also had, scrolling up a little bit more, Kishimoto statements, football club in Italy, AC Milan, posted, quote, we'll try tackling life with as much energy as Goku. We loved every minute. Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. And then they posted a photo with some of the Dragon Ball hair photoshopped on, two of their players doing the fusion pose. The Xbox Twitter account posted, thank you for everything, Akira Toriyama. Your legendary work will continue to inspire generations to come. Shonen Jump chimed in, as well as Viz Media did. The Archie Comics Twitter account posted an artwork that was done by one of their artists saying Archie Comics celebrates the life of Akira Toriyama, and it's Goku standing right there next to Archie doing a pose. You know, it's Stephen A. Smith from ESPN chimed in, which I was
not expecting that.
Blown away by that. Studio Ghibli chimed in. You know, the mangaka of Dragon Ball, Akira Toriyama, who cradled us all as children, has sadly passed away at the age of 68. You know, and it can't be. I know it's been said by a lot, but for me, and I know a lot of others, Dragon Ball was the intro into anime and manga for me. I was already aware of it, like, because I remember when Toonami started on Cartoon Network back in the mid-90s. I think it started like 96, 97, somewhere in there. Like, I know they've showed some other animes. I know Sailor Moon was one of them, you know, a host of others. But the one I really latched onto and went, this is different, this looks awesome, was Dragon Ball. You know, and it quickly became the number one show at school to talk about with a bunch of my friends and classmates, where it was on at the perfect time. You got home from school, you flipped on the TV, Toonami was on, and you're waiting for that new episode of Dragon Ball. And people nowadays, you got it easy. You got to wait a week for the new episode to come out, and it's always out. You know it's going to be out until you know when the end of the season's going to be, and you go about your day. The annoying thing, and I understand why it was the way it was, because adapting and doing voiceovers and dubs and all that is not as easy as it is today, or not as easy then as it is today. Because, you know, I remember when Dragon Ball was airing, you know, they're waiting for Goku to show up on Namek.
Yeah.
And he finally shows up, and it's like, all right, he's about ready to start whooping ass and taking names, and we're going to see what happens. We had to wait 4 months to find out what happened. Because the episode where he showed up was in May. You had 4 months after that was the next episode. So I come home from school, because this was a daily thing, come home from school going, all right, let's see Goku whoop some ass. It's the first episode of Dragon Ball. And I went, what?
Yeah.
You know, it was just such a part of my life. You know, I thank him for everything. You know, the fact that, you know, I got to see the show, enjoy the show, and became such a fan of everything, I can't thank him enough. If you have the ability to watch it, I know Toonami this weekend is running a Dragon Ball Z Kai marathon. It kicks off at 2 a.m. Eastern and will finish at 5:30 a.m. Eastern, and it is the first 8 episodes of the anime. For those of you who aren't familiar, Dragon Ball Z Kai was like a redo, and that's the best way I can put it, where stuff was updated. You know, they cut the filler. It was more true to the anime. So it's the first episodes of Dragon Ball Z Kai. So that will be on. That's this weekend, Saturday, March 16th. That is when that is on. If you are not able to watch that, I do know in the United States, all Dragon Ball series, so Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball GT, and Dragon Ball Super, along with the Dragon Ball Z movies, and that's the Dragon Ball Z movies from like Tree of Life or Tree of Might or whatever it is, all the way up through Broly, are on Crunchyroll. So if you haven't seen the franchise in a while, or you haven't seen it at all for whatever reason, and because of this you're a little motivated to watch it this weekend or watch it going forward, in the States it's all available on Crunchyroll. Outside the U.S. you have to do some searching and do some research on your own. But to Akira Toriyama, thank you for the world you created. I would not have gotten into anime if it weren't for you.
Yeah, no, his passing, I mean, very tragic, and honestly, our deepest heartfelt condolences out to his family, friends, and fans all over the world. The legacy he leaves behind, I don't think people realize.
Yeah, like, anime would not be what it is in the States were it not for Toriyama.
Yeah.
And the success it had. And even before that, because Naruto is influenced by Dragon Ball.
Mm-hmm.
One Piece was influenced by Dragon Ball. Yeah. I dare you to find me an anime out there today that is not in some fashion, whether large or small, influenced by Dragon Ball. And if you don't kind of understand the lasting legacy he had and the impact he had on the industry, the easiest comparison I can make is like when Marvel lost Stan Lee.
Yeah.
That's just how big of an industry icon Toriyama was.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can definitely sense that. I mean, you talk to anybody that's into the fandom, even a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, the tributes have been coming out left and right.
Yeah.
I know our guy Mickey Smith over at Nerd Initiative did this amazing one for TikTok and our video platforms. So, I mean, you can just tell, like, just the impact that he's left on people and the legacy that he's leaving behind, too.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you got the time this weekend, definitely go check some of the work out.
Yeah, and like the letter said, you know, this isn't the last we're going to see of him. You know, obviously, the manga's still going on. He still had some work on that. Dragon Ball Daima is still coming down the road. He was working on that. So this isn't the end. This isn't the last. You know, we haven't seen the last of his work. There will still be some stuff coming, and the franchise will live on.
Absolutely. So definitely make sure you go out and support it where you can. You know, catch some of it this weekend.
Yeah.
That'll be the homework assignment. That's it for anything and everything that is the ODPH. You can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for the entertainment edition this week. So for the one and only, Padawan J.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Ken M. Thank you, as always, for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.